Hello, everybody. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. Welcome to our October edition of the Artful Asking Success Club. Welcome, new members. And just as a reminder, this call and all of our calls are recorded and they're posted on my website someplace, and you can have access to them there anytime you want. And I purposely make this an audio only because I want you to be able to walk or be in your car or be doing something that doesn't require your mind, but listen to these, kind of like a podcast. Speaking of podcast, in the year 2018, I am going to begin a podcast that will be shorter segments and happen once a week. So I'm very excited about that. If you're a member of the Success Club, I thank you, and I honor you for making this investment into your own professional development and growth. If you're a guest, welcome. And but to let you know that the series that I'm doing this year, I will be offering in its entirety next year as a series. So if you have enjoyed it and there are other folks that you would like to experience this as well, it will be available as a program next year that you can download and go through it on your, at your own pace. And it'll include some extra worksheets and discussion topics and some online self-guided programming so that you can make the most of these calls that we're having. If you ever have any trouble, please send a note to info@marcyheim.com and somebody will help you. I've got just a few announcements coming up on November 8th. I'm doing a webinar with my good friends at FireSpring, and it's called It's a Wrap. If you have not heard me do that program, I think you would enjoy it. A wrap is a relationship action plan. We've talked about it in our Dial Down the Drama series, but this is an entire 90-minute or maybe hour and 15-minute webinar dedicated to what is a wrap and how do you create one. And in the follow-up email, I will try to get you a link to this. It's noon on November 8th, noon Central Time. On November 16th, I will be at AFP in New Jersey keynoting, and again, my favorite topic, Dial Down the Drama. And if you're anywhere in that New Jersey area and there's and you have not signed up for the conference, it's really powerful. They've got just an amazing lineup, and I'm just thrilled to be their keynote speaker. I'm just delighted. Our next call for Dial Down the Drama is Tuesday, November 21st. I realize that's Thanksgiving week, but I thought that a lot of you would be around that week and probably not left for travel yet, but you might be doing more traveling the week ahead and the week after. So I left it on Tuesday. And speaking of which, I thank you for your patience. My travel schedule has just been such that if I can't get somewhere where I can be confident I can get the internet in a secure way where it's not going to drop on and off on me, I just want to postpone our call. So I appreciate you jumping around as I've had to do that with my travel. Thanks so much. Our December call is Tuesday, December 19th. And, oh, by the way, our November call is about managing my energy, managing your energy. So we've talked about managing our time, but I really am starting to believe more than our time, it's about our energy, because we can log all kinds of hours, but if we're not at a place where we can be productive, it's not so helpful. So that's coming up in November. And December, our final call of the year is the words we use. And this will certainly be about our fundraising words, but I want to end this year by really talking about how we talk to each other, to ourselves, to our families, and those words that we use are so important. So that will be our December call. Okay, today's program is part of this year-long special series, Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success in Raising Money and Life. Drama down, dollars up. I sincerely believe that we invest and spend precious energy and time engaged in these emotions that don't serve us. In fact, after we have this kind of dramatic moment over something, it leaves us a bit drained, a bit. The word that one of my coaching clients said to me was depleted. That sometimes when we have one of these dramatic moments, we're depleted. I think it's a perfect word. It's an absolutely perfect word. And that's what this whole series is about. The time that we waste lamenting about what might happen if, so that's one way we get into this, what might happen if we don't make our totals, we don't raise enough money, our boss doesn't like us, the new person coming in doesn't get along, our husband loses their job, our spouse loses a job, our kids get into trouble. So all of these what happened if things out there that we can't even begin to control or manage, but we worry about them anyway, and they're not even reality yet. That's one way we waste this energy. The other thing is how much energy we spend putting off something we think is going to be hard or icky. Or I've got to tell you, I just had an amazing example of this. And where was my time? Okay. My CFRE recertification came up, and it's coming up, and it was due like December something. And I thought, oh, my gosh, here we go. That's going to be such a big process. It's going to take me forever. I'm going to have to find all of these things to put in there. Do you hear this? This is dialing up the drama. Right now, I'm taking my drama button and I'm just cranking it right up. And I went, Marcy, 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 what are you doing here? You're dialing up the drama. So again, in this whole series, I say this each and every month because the most important step in dealing with drama is recognizing it. So I said, here you are, you're going drama. So I said, all right, I'm just going to peek into the site and see what this is like. So I peeked into the site. Well, back in the day when I got my CFRE, probably 10 years ago now, or maybe it's longer, we did everything by forms. We printed out and filled in and copied them and mailed them in and all this. And CFRE has really worked to make the renewal process pretty easy online, or so I'd heard. So I jumped online. And then I simply just split my computer screen, a techie Marcy here, and put my calendar, my Google calendar on one side, and the CFRE certification form on the other. And I said, I'll just put in a couple. What is this? I'm just going to start. I'm just going to start. So I found the form, typed in my address was the same and all that good stuff, and just start it. Well, before you know it, I had the first section done. I had all those points done. And that was your work, and I had only gone back a year, and I had already met the things we needed to meet. And then I went on to the next session, Long story short, my friends, yesterday in the email, I already got that my recertification's been approved. So now look at the difference between being all wrapped up about, oh, my gosh, I have to do the CFRE recertification. It's going to take so much time. It's going to be so hard. I'll tell you, the last time I did it, I think the deadline was midnight on whatever, and here I was, 11:50, cranking in that form, trying to get my recertification done. What a joy it is to say, oh, that's done, and it's 2 months ahead of time. Yeah, right? So celebrate with me and understand that's what I'm getting at when I say dial down the drama. Recognize it and say, I'm going to approach this differently. And that really wasn't so bad. After all, I kind of made it more than it was. This sounds so simple, but I really, truly want you to see a dial of some sort. And I know the world isn't as filled with dials as it used to be, but see a dial of some sort and see your own hand. Look at your own hand and see your own hand reaching up for it and cranking it up and cranking it down. And again, this is what they call an anchor for you. It's a visual anchor, but it's a physical anchor. An anchor is something you can take your hand up, you can reach it out, you can visualize that dial, and you can turn it down, or you can turn it up, but you want to turn it down. So I turned down that dial on the CFR thing, and it was great. Your hand controls the dial. That's the important part here, is our minds and our thoughts will take us to places You can get an email, and somebody can say, I got an email. It was filled with, where's my time here? I got to keep moving here. But it was filled with all of these wonderful things people said after one of my talks. One of the comments was, you know, I just don't get these songs. I don't know what it is, but I don't get these songs. Really? And I fixated on that one comment instead of saying, Marcy, she just doesn't get the music. She just doesn't get the songs. It's okay. No judgment. Dial down the drama. So it's always within our power. Our success and joy is dependent certainly on our skills and our abilities, but so much more on that inner game that happens before we even have a chance to apply those tools and those techniques we learned. What's happening in our thinking impacts how we even go about using our knowledge and all the things that we know. Our thinking leads to our feelings lead to our beliefs, and our beliefs, here you go, you're finally getting to taking some action. And yep, the actions we take lead to our results. So it all begins with how we think. So today I'm asking you to think about and become more aware of your legacy. Your legacy. Your legacy. I want to move past the drama of the end of life. Oh, no, they've got cancer. Oh, no, this is not. Oh, and I know we're all there, and I'm not trying to say in any way, shape, or form that when we lose people, it doesn't impact us, and it doesn't put us into a process of having to grieve and think through and deal with. But it doesn't have to be the life stopping and sometimes for years episode this is for some people. And it also can be something that we embrace differently and say, what if, and use these situations to embrace philanthropy and create a legacy, whether this is somebody dying of old age or whether this is somebody who's 40 and doesn't think they're ever going to die, or somebody who's 20 and thinks 40 is old. Now, we could all live in a bubble, never venturing out for fear that something might happen to us. If I never leave the house, I won't get in a car accident. Yeah, I guess. I know many of you in this group. I'm looking at who's on our call today. And I know that some of you have experienced some pretty tough situations. You've lost kids sooner than you should. You've lost parents. You've lost spouses. You've lost donors who are very important in your lives. You've lost very special friends. And each time a person becomes part of our lives in a different way, so they're no longer present here and now, we're faced with sharing their legacy with others in a way that honors them. And when we do that, it also helps us live without them here. Helping our kids remember their grandparents. I don't know that I ever get past the story of my dad to my son that I don't tear up a little bit. But it's important for me to share his legacy with my kids who barely knew him. They were 4 and 1 when he passed. And helping students remember or appreciate the donors who made their scholarship possible. Or helping the people we serve understand. I don't think we do enough of this. Helping them understand that somebody gave dollars so that they had a meal to eat or they had this facility to sleep in. I mean, to really connect those dots from them. It's not just our organization. But I think we work so hard to have our donors connect with the people we serve. But do we have the people we serve really connect with the donors who make some of our ability to do our mission possible from the other side? And then, you know, there's always that nagging question that I don't think really serves us unless it reminds us to be grateful, and that is, what if? You know, what if I'm hit by the proverbial bus next week? You know, what if I knock my head in the shower? Well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time there except if it reminds me to be grateful that I got up this morning and said, I create my life. Okay, then I'll entertain that question. So why am I having an entire program on this? Why is it important to our major gift work? Well, because I'll bet some of you were a little bit squirmy just in this last little bit of conversation I had. And the more that we get comfortable with our own legacy and talking about our own legacy, which is about our mortality, which is about the fact that someday we're not going to be interacting with people upright and chatting. We're going to be interacting with people as a memory, as somebody who's gone. So it's about our own mortality. So when we get comfortable with our own mortality, we can help others fashion a legacy. It becomes easier for us to bring it up and to talk about it. I remember when I first started at the UW Foundation, youngest fundraiser they ever hired, I was only like 19 or 20, and I used to always say, when that event occurs, when I was talking to somebody about doing something in their will, when that event occurs, because it was just too weird for me to say, when you die, to somebody. I was just like, I don't want to say that. So when that event occurs, and finally, her name was Alice Rehm, and finally she said to me, are you trying to say when I die? And she laughed and laughed and laughed, and we had a conversation around how she felt about death and dying, and more of her concerns were around how she would be remembered, how her money would be managed, what her kids would do with her money, if she'd had a decent enough estate plan. Her husband was gone, and she felt the weight of this whole estate management on her shoulders. It gave me a whole different understanding, and you know, kind of said, Marcy, get over yourself. Again, dial down the drama. It's not about your comfort level with death and dying. It's about getting a grip on this so you can talk to your donors about it without going, well, you know, and when you die. So, and I also think, I want to do this right at the beginning too, I also think this depends on whether you're faith-based or not, but even if your spirit and your belief is just that we go back to the ground, there's still a transition of how we're in the world that I think we all need to embrace and think through on our own. So faith-based or not, this is still something that we need to address. So starting from where I always do, our thinking. What are we thinking about as we grow older? Do we boldly state, it's never too late to become what you might have been? Or do you see age as more limiting? At 20, 40 is old after all. At 60, some start talking about slowing down. I think that's deadly. So here is our agenda for our call today. First, I'm going to lead you through how to create your own legacy, followed by two exercises that you can use to get a handle on your own legacy, and they're kind of fun too. One's called a six-word memory, and one's writing your own obit. And hint, hint, you can use these two exercises with your donors, either one-on-one or as a group. Then secondly, I'll talk about questions that lay the stage for considering legacy giving. These are some questions that I developed when I worked with Russ Howes, who is now passed from the UW Foundation. He was an incredible, incredible estate planning professional, in fact, president of the whole international planners group. And he put these questions together as ones we could sprinkle into our conversations. And I'll also be sure I'm making a note here. I'll send those out with the follow-up note. I'll send these questions out as well. And they're questions we can use to kind of get a sense of how much a deferred gift or this whole legacy or estate planning thing will fit with our donors. Okay, so let's begin by defining what we're talking about. What is your legacy? The idea of having a legacy is the need or the desire to be remembered for what you have contributed to the world. Now, in some cases, this contribution can be so amazing and so special that the universe is unalterably changed forever. However, most of us mere mortals walking around, will leave a more modest legacy that doesn't necessarily change the world en masse, But it does. But it does, my friends, leave a lasting footprint that will be remembered by those lives we've touched. And I believe sincerely that those of us in this honorable and noble profession of development touch a lot of lives that we leave our legacy mark upon as we help people find the joy in their giving. We all hope our life matters in some ways. I know I do. When any of you say to me, oh, Marcy, you made a monstrous difference in how I feel about what I'm doing or go about my work, or how this honorable and noble profession, just the words that you use, has helped me be happier and more joy-filled, that just lights me up. It's huge. It's sort of a living legacy. And if I am only that woman who keeps saying, I create my life, but she was really helpful, that's good enough for me. If people don't even remember my name, but they just say, yeah, she was the one that was always thumping on, I create my life. I think you'd all agree that we want to have a good legacy as a parent, a husband, a wife, a sister, a friend. There's a quote, carve your name on hearts, not tombstones. A legacy is etched into the mind of others and the stories they share about you. That was from Shannon Alder. I think it's important because our legacy is indeed etched into the mind of others and the stories they tell. So how do we go about our lives so that we create the stories that are told that become our legacy, right? First and foremost, support the people and causes that are important to you. So being philanthropic with your time, being generous, living a generous life in your time and your dollars supports those around us. There's a reason that we all love our dogs. They support us unconditionally. They don't judge us. May we go through life as that type of relative friend or donor. How's that going for us now? Are we supporting people with our time? Are we putting our dollars into places that mean things to us? And as we do so, talk about what we're doing. Let me give you an example of this. I think examples are so powerful. Yesterday I got a call from UW-Whitewater. My son David's gone there for a semester. This was a student. She says, hi, this is Amanda, and I'm calling from UW-Whitewater. I'm just curious, and I thought it was a fundraising call, a parents call. And she says, I'm just wondering if David is still at Whitewater. And apparently they were just updating records. And I said, oh, no, he's at the Berklee College of Music in Boston. Oh, she said, that's incredible. And I said, yeah, but I said, you know what? And then she said, well, I'll update our records. And that could have easily been the end of the call. And I thought, no, I'm going to invest some time here, and I'm going to support her more. And I just said, Amanda, I said, I want you to know that we were down at Whitewater just 2 weekends ago for Parents Weekend down there because David has so many good friends at Whitewater, and we are friends with their parents, and we all got together for Parents Weekend, even though David's now in Boston. And his experience at UW-Whitewater was incredible. He rocked all his general education classes, and all of those credits easily transferred to Berklee. It's been a wonderful experience for us. And she said, oh, thank you so much for sharing that. Oh, that's just great to hear. And the change in her was palpable and made me feel amazing. Now, that was 2 minutes of my time. And she said, thank you again. Thank you so much. I'll update the records. Thank you so much. Now, again, I was surprised. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. I thought there was still going to be a solicitation mixed in with this. But no, they were just updating their records. And it was a delightful call. And it was something that I think really meant a lot to her. So support the people and causes important to you. Second, reflect and decide on what is most important in your life. And this is about time. Dedicating time to review your life's journey, to reflect and take in what's going on. from the routine to the amazing. Did you grow and perhaps transform in your life? Did you make the changes you needed to make? Did you find truth? Did you inspire others? Did you become a leader or influence? Touching lives and exemplifying a truthful path is paramount to living a joyful and purposeful life. And that will create the kind of legacy that will live on. Number three, share your blessings with others. When I look at the clouds, I think of all the blessings I have in my life. From cleaning the cat boxes to scores of special moments I am now more present in. I make a point of being present. I try to be mindful of sharing with others the richness of my life. I have been blessed with abundance, and it's my legacy to give back this abundance to others. Everyone has blessings to share, even if it's a simple smile of acknowledgement. So to review, number one is support the people and causes that are important to you. Number two, reflect and decide what's most important in your life. Three, share your blessings with others. Four, be a mentor to others. That's really jumping in and saying, I'm smart in this. They could use some help with this, and I am going to be that mentor. I am going to be that guide to them. These mentor relationships can be so important to people's self-worth and self-value and self-confidence. And sometimes these mentor relationships last a lifetime, and oftentimes, even when they don't, the kind of mentorship we give to others is the thing that people state as being a turning point in their life. So being a mentor to others is a huge part of creating your legacy. And finally, number five, pursue your passions because they're infectious. So as you go through life, if you've always wanted to skydive, for goodness sakes, get out there and do it. Passions come from an outpouring of interests and ideas that make a difference in our lives. And finding and pursuing ours allows us to see our destiny really clearly. So for me, it's singing and being a positive influence in the world. My sister has a passion for collecting old stuff. At times we just roll our eyes as she has 16 plastic Easter rabbits, but she's so darn excited about this stuff that honestly, her gifts are the ones we cherish the most. So that's how you can start creating your own legacy, the kinds of ways you can live day to day that will create your own legacy. Okay, so now how do we define our legacy and help our donors do the same? There are two tools that I want to give you today, and both of these I have used individually with donors and with clients. So the first tool is a 6-word memoir. You might already be familiar with this. The idea is that in just 6 words, I want you to sum up your life, aka define your legacy. I've used this both to help donors get clear on their own legacy and to help my clients get clear on their mission statements. This all began with an internet challenge that resulted in thousands of submissions and ended up generating a book called 6 Words, Not Quite What I Was Planning. And it's a collection of 1,000 of these. The book is a glorious mishmash. If you don't have it, you can find it online. Again, Not Quite What I Was Planning. But it's a collection of like 1,000 little windows into humanity, 6 words at a time. And what's powerful for me in today's message is that we get a surprisingly meaningful glimpse of our donors' lives within these 6 words. When you do this with your donors, you will get an entirely unique experience with them, and it's fun. So let me share just a few of them. And again, there are 1,000 in this book. Let me share just a few of them. Thought I would have more impact. Now, again, everything I'm saying is only 6 words. This is called 6-word memoir. Thought I would have more impact. There's some in this book that are from famous people. Here's Stephen Colbert. Well, I thought it was funny. And many of you heard Dr. Jane Goodall. She spoke at AFP International a few years back. Hers is Forest Peace, Sharing Vision, Always Optimistic. Arianna Huffington has Fearlessness is the Mother of Reinvention. Then there's a prolific author. Her name is Joyce Carol Oates. You may or may not be familiar with her. She's a fellow Badger, got her master's at Wisconsin. She said, revenge is living well without you. I'm sure some of you will smile at that one. But most of the memoirs in the book are from ordinary folks who just wanted to share something about themselves in 6 words. These results are as diverse as people are. And again, your donors will give you such an incredible window into their lives if you just say, hey, I want to do this little exercise while we're together. So some folks are disappointed. Coulda, shoulda, woulda, a regretful life. 6 words. To the really satisfied, I traveled each and every highway. I immediately heard that as a line from the song And Did It My Way by Frank Sinatra. Some could be new sayings like, time heals all wounds? Not quite. Or there was one that was, the long and hard, thought long and hard, excuse me, got migraine. Many are from people who are summing up a life well lived. I'm not afraid of anything anymore. I wouldn't change it a bit. And others, not so much. I watched a lot of television. Nothing profound. I just sat around. Some people are finding their way, taking a lifetime to grow up. Others definitely found it. Now I blog and drink wine. Some clearly relish life, saw the sky and started walking. Some just seem content, became more like myself every year. Some are learning along the way, followed yellow brick road, disappointment ensued. Or followed rules, not dreams, never again. Some are a little defiant. I colored outside of the lines, asked to quiet down, spoke louder. I'm giving you all these examples because I think it would be good to go into these donor conversations with some of these written down. So, afraid of everything, did it anyway. 70 years, few tears, hairy ears. Or found great happiness in insignificant details. There's a lot of power in that one. Never really finished anything except cake. Some are wistful, extremely responsible, secretly longed for spontaneity. My life's a bunch of almosts. But others recall their success. Ran away with the circus, never returned. Marked time till 55, reborn thereafter. Some of them talked about their family situations. My family is overflowing with therapists. Middle of 7 made me me. Afraid of becoming like my mother. And then there's, I'm my mother and I'm fine. I've changed mine from time to time. My 6 words have changed. And currently, my 6 words is making music, making memories, making magic. So now it's your turn. If you have not been doing this as I talked, please take a minute and just write down, if you're driving in the car, of course, don't do this, think about it, but what 6 words describe your life? What 6 words describe the essence of who you are? And if somebody said, yep, talking about Marcy Heim, yep, that's making music, making memories, and making magic. That describes her. So take a minute to do that, and I'll remind you again. Again, the publication is called Not Quite What I Was Planning, and from today's program, I know you get the idea. In 6 words, we create short accounts that sum up ourselves to one another. Think about inscriptions on monuments, mottos on city crests, but in our world, our mission statements or titles for our organization reports. Think of a powerful 6-word phrase. Okay, on to tool number two. Tool number two is about writing your obituary. And I'm sure some of you are saying, whoa, I got on this call today to do what? It's so vitally important for us to be able, again, to comfortably talk about end of life, about what happens when we aren't around, about what really creates a legacy. How do we live our lives in such a way that we're creating our legacy? So in the long run, bottom line is we all are fertilizer. We all end up back in the ground, or maybe we're ashes in a tube. But that's a guarantee. Each and every one of us will at some point be gone. So each and every day is a new opportunity to create our personal legacy. Each day is filled with choices. Waste time or seize the moment. Gossip or redirect it. Wine or rejoice. Cupcake or carrot. Work through lunch or walk. Be overwhelmed or thrilled. We can choose differently this very day, and then we can choose differently again tomorrow. What's so awesome about our world is that every day we get up, I create my life, and we make those choices. But over time, we create major results. Happiness is a gift we choose to declare for ourselves. And connecting our major givers to causes is powerful and transformational and helps them make these choices every day. So talking to them about how our choices create our legacy is a very powerful conversation to have, and one I've had many times. And as part of doing this, at least once a year, I write my obituary. It helps me make better choices all year long. So writing your own obituary, I'd like you to do that now or when you are with paper and pen, or when you can just type it into your computer or wherever you are and revise it from time to time. Start with the end in mind. Ask yourself, how will the people who matter the most to me remember me? What impact have I made on their lives? Now you can do the entire process. Where were you born, parents' name, etc. But for our purpose here, I'm just going to do a snippet of it. So here goes. Marcy Heim roared into heaven on this date, and of course this date's in the future because I'm right here, confident it was there. I know there's a place we're going. She was born on November 15th, National Philanthropy Day, and was passionate about the power of giving and composing a good world. She and her life partner, Ken, created three children, Carly, RJ, and David, to be positive, responsible, and contribute to society. After 23 years with the UW Foundation, she stepped away and created harmony between her professional and personal lives. With her own business, The Artful Asker, she was a speaker, author, and coach, joining people and nonprofit passions together with major gift success and authenticity. With her band, Marcy and the Highlights, she shared a special connection with all through her music. Her passion and energy were contagious, but also demanding, and she was driven at times to overpack life, seek perfection, and strike hard. She died with her desk a mess, boxes of clutter left behind to sort, and too many good intentions left undone, but with a sincere love of her family, donors, and clients. All are asked to contribute to a charity of their choice in her memory, and to continue to compose a good world. So there you go. That's how I would like to be remembered. And those of you who know me know I'm in this constant struggle over clutter. And I just love stuff or have something with stuff. But that's another topic. So I have some things yet to accomplish. But I'm pretty comfortable with where I'm at right now. How about you? Stop and take some time to answer these questions. What do you want your life to represent? How would you like to be remembered? Write it out, print it out, and let this be your guide as you make choices and decisions every day of your life. And let this be your guide in a conversation you have with your donors. They will so appreciate that. I spoke at more funerals, and I think that's because of these kinds of conversations that I had with my major donors. And they would start out with, "Ick, you want to talk about what? You write your what?" And consider that I was having a lot of these conversations when I was in my 20s and 30s. And they were like, "Oh my goodness, you write your obituary?" Because remember that, yes, there are two dates. There's your date of birth and there's your date of death. So we say, you know, 1910 to 1980. And the two in there, that dash is what really matters. It matters what you do with the dash that's in between those two numbers. So when I work with donors, they are put off a little bit, but I take them through these five ideas. First, I tell them, you know, just start. It doesn't matter how incomplete, it will benefit you now and others after your death. So five ideas around this. One, just start. Just do it. Just write something down. Two, record the facts. Now, in mine, I don't have some of that stuff about she got her Bachelor's of Science from the University of Wisconsin, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's something that as I get older, the next time I go at this, I'm going to be sure that I also put more of those specific, you know, she married her husband Ken in September 7th, 1991, or whatever it was, and I think that was the date. But I'll put some of those facts in there so that my family doesn't have to run around and try to find them. Make it available. If you write these things up, but your family can't find it, what good is it? So make it a Word document you share with people. So everybody has a copy of it. Every time you update it, put it out there. Truly, it's a gift to your family. It's a gift your donors can share with their family, and it helps them decide what's important to them to invest. Number four, go beyond. So your obituary could actually be expanded into a longer memoir. And one of my donors, his name is Bob Walton, is now writing his memoir because as he put this thing together, he realized he had this incredible life. So at 80-something, he's having someone help him turn it into a book. And it'll be fabulous. He's done so much. And instead of just being an obituary, it can also be a place where you record your thoughts and preferences about your funeral plans and those kinds of things. So it and frankly, how you want people to give. Now, I want my family to give to certain things, but I want people who know me when I'm gone to give to whatever charity they want to give to. If me passing inspires somebody to be generous, that is the best legacy I could have. When my dad died, we would have people who would put $5 bills in an envelope and say, "I want this to go to St. Teresa's Church or whatever, and you know, wherever." Oh, my goodness gracious, we got so many of those. And so we would have to write a check, find the address, you know, send it off and say, "This $5 check is from so-and-so, given in memory of my dad so-and-so." And it was quite a bit of work. And my mom at times said, "Oh, my goodness gracious, why didn't they just drop the $5 on the collection plate and say, there you go, Bob?" And the whole process of giving, the whole process of giving in memory is part of dealing with a grieving process and part of dealing with an honor process. And we must never judge the amounts, judge the charities, but in fact let this whole system be what it is, a way for all of us to honor each other's legacy in a powerful way. So go beyond. The last one is inspire yourself. By doing this whole obituary thing, live the kind of life that would make an interesting obituary. And that may very well simply be to be the very best person you can be and use all the gifts you have. So let me run by those five ideas one more time. Just start, record the facts, make it available, go beyond just the obituary to more about your giving your funeral plans or giving ideas or those kinds of things. Like, I want fireworks at my funeral. And the last one, inspire yourself. All right, so now, oh, good, I've got some time. Oh, so now, that was kind of the art side. I'd like to also talk to you a little bit about the science side of legacy giving. And understand that legacy giving doesn't just mean deferred gifts. It doesn't just mean estate or will gifts or tools that happen after you die. It can be outright gifts that form an endowment, that form your legacy. But I still find that whenever we do something that is kind of forming a legacy, this whole idea about how we're going to be remembered creeps into it. So somebody who's giving you dollars to create an outright endowment today is still thinking about the fact that that endowment will have that benefit at the Humane Society or that scholarship or that program live on after they don't. That's the whole idea of an endowment. So it always creeps back to this idea of legacy. So here are a list of questions that you can use to see if a deferred gift is a fit or just how people feel about this whole legacy thing from a fundraising perspective. Now, please don't consider these 10 questions as something you take out on your clipboard and say, all right, now, here's our 10 questions I'd like to ask you today. No, this isn't an interrogation, of course not. These are questions that you gently weave into the conversations you're having with your major donors on those creating a joyful giver calls you make, and they help you lead to a meaningful and artful ask. So the first question, is income during your lifetime important to you? This is important because someone can have all the money in the world, but if they feel like they really need to have enough income to do this or this or this, that's important to them. And any tool you put together, so making a larger outright gift might not be comfortable for them, and making an estate gift might, because then they still have their dollars today, but also looking at some kind of a deferred income vehicle where you, like a charitable remainder trust or an annuity, where you invest today and it bumps dollars out to you for the rest of your life, that income might be very important to them. And so some kind of an income-producing deferred gift will be the place to start and to talk about. Second question, what are your feelings about providing for your children or your grandchildren? This is really a telling and wonderful question, because some people will say, for example, Ken and I, we have decided all of our kids, we pay for their first degree, and they've ranged in how expensive they are. We kick in money for their down payment on their first house, and we provide a little bit for their wedding, and only one's gotten married. But by and large, beyond that, we feel that what we do with our final will probably be philanthropic. We will see when grandchildren come. We might change our mind. I'm sure we will. But right now, our plan is we're empowering our kids with an education and with their first start in owning something. And that's what we want to do for all three of them. And beyond that, we want to live our lives and spend our money in ways that works for us. We don't feel like we're obligated to pass every dime on to our kids. Some people will say to you, well, of course, I'll take my estate. I have three kids. I'll divide it by three, and there you go. That's my duty as a parent. And they very clearly feel that passing on is just the way you do it. So that's an important conversation. What project are you interested in, and what options are available for supporting this goal? Does a combination of immediate and long-term work? So what I'm getting at by this third question is, when you look at something that they want to do and I'm going to use a scholarship, but it could be to fund a staff member for professional development, and it would work in any organization. It's important to them, and depending on how they feel about this legacy thing, they might very well approach it by saying, I'll give $1,000 every year so that somebody can go to a conference. And then they might say, oh, but this is something that's probably going to be evergreen. There's always going to be a need for staff training. So I could endow this with a gift in my will because it will be just as important when I die as it is now. So what that project is determines how people can handle it in their will. Of course, it's wonderful to have unrestricted giving in someone's will, but I do think it's important to have a conversation with them if they want, if their anticipation is that that will gift will be endowed and not spent, or that will gift will be spent. And be sure you clarify that. That's part of being a good development officer. Number four, what kind of recognition do you enjoy? And then how does this fit in with your giving plans? So, for example, his name was Walter Rank, and a very, very dear friend of mine and wonderful donor. When he made a gift of an estate gift, it was a deferred gift, he made the gift. And even though that gift was not real yet, it was not money we had, he felt as if he had given it. So he was wondering when we were going to get started already. Well, we didn't have any money to start anything with. And he was waiting for all of the kind of recognition, not in a sense of his personal recognition, but in a sense of recognition of what he had made possible. When was this project going to start? And that's a real important conversation to have with people. In their minds, they've made the gift. Your organization doesn't have the money. It's deferred. Number five, are there any special needs, children or elderly parents or college educations? So in other words, what are things that are really demanding on their dollars right now? And what's the timeline for those things? Because you can help people put a plan together and fund it in such a way that it takes into account these special needs. Or maybe it turns out that these are things that will be an obstacle for them in doing some of the giving they want to do. But you need to talk about it. Number six, how do you feel about and have planned for long-term health care? Health care is on everyone's mind. It's getting more and more expensive. My goodness, what happens if we get hurt when we're traveling? I mean, health care is just a monster thing for people. I think I have this as a separate question, but it also spills over a little bit into what are your plans for assisted living, nursing home care, those kinds of things, because that can be monstrously expensive. So I had a woman once who wanted to give me her entire estate right now. And I said, you know, I'm not really comfortable doing that because she was never been married and in living on her own in an apartment at 80-something, but what if that changed? So I said, you know, we'll work out a plan where we'll slowly over time transfer your estate, but I'm not comfortable taking it all at once. She got livid with me, livid. She said, you're too darn dumb to know what I'm trying to do here. Well, I wasn't dumb at all. It was not in her best interest. I want to talk to the president. So literally, she made me get our president on the phone at the time, Sandy Wilcox, and so I'm calling his number, kind of hoping he doesn't answer. Of course, he answers on the first ring, and I said, Sandy, I'm with, and she said, give me that phone. She says to our president, oh, my goodness, I have Marcy Heim here, and she's too darn dumb to take this money. That's how it started. And Sandy asked a couple of questions, because then she said, no, I want to give my whole will to the university, and she won't take it. And then he must have asked her something else, and then she said, well, no, I don't have this or that, but I'm doing, and oh, she's getting even madder, and then angrier. And then finally she bangs down the phone, and she looks at me, and she says, he's just as stupid as you are. So that is the time that you're grateful your boss backs up what you're doing, right? But it was not in her best interest, and it was not ethical in terms of how we did this. So she didn't have any plans in place for long-term care. And as it turns out, it was about a year later, she needed to go into some long-term care, and she needed more money than she would have gotten from the interest on investing her entire estate in some kind of charitable trust that would not have met her needs. So we did the right thing. And there was a point in time when she agreed we had done the right thing. Because she could not get that money back. It was irrevocable. All right. Number seven, what is your comfort level with assets needed to secure to feel secure during your lifetime? That plays into a little bit of what I said. What do they still need to have so they can feel secure during their lifetime? And that's a couple of different questions, too. It's what they actually need to be secure and what they feel they need to be secure. So if any of them have lived through the Great Depression, it's a much bigger number. What else, number eight, what else do you support that may impact the deduction planned giving options make available for you to take? So this is an important question for somebody who's really philanthropic. You know, you're kind of asking them, we're looking at doing a major kind of investment to help with your legacy here. What other thoughts do you have and with what other organizations? Because they might be talking to you about their estate and you're thinking you've got the full number to work with when they've got a couple, three charities they want to support, and so you're only working with a fraction of their estate. That's important to know. Because you also only have so much deduction you can make in each year. How quickly do you expect one to see the impact of your gift? This goes back a little bit to the recognition you enjoy. And it's the same kind of thing where understand that you're making a deferred gift. So if somebody really wants action now, that's the kind of conversation to say, okay, well, we can put this in your will, but in the meantime, if you'll consider a gift of $1,000, $5,000, whatever it is, every year, we can start accomplishing part of what your estate gift will do right now. And that's so powerful to have that conversation. And they might not start the annual gift the same year in which they are on an endowment or doing a deferred gift, but you start having that conversation. What's also amazing about that is it gives you the opportunity to be a grateful recipient and do some really wonderful result work with them in the here and now, being really showing the impact of their gift now, being able to thank them right now. The last question, what assets can come into this mix and are there any special circumstances surrounding that asset? So that's a whole idea of do they have assets that'll be harder or easier to put. Again, I'll put these questions into my follow-up message to you. So as I close today, I want you to think about your legacy and your money. You see, every time we spend money, all of our expenditures, but especially giving, whether from the heart or from the wallet, in the past or the present, big or small, can be viewed as either depleting or enriching. And I want you to think about every check you write. Does it make you feel depleted? Does it make you feel enriched? And work on a couple of things for me. Work on even paying your bills becoming an enriching experience. I get to invest in the phone company because I have a telephone. I like to think of every single dollar I spend as being enriching for me. Give generously to memorial funds. Invest in the legacies of others. Think about it. It will all become your legacy. The great use of life is to spend it for something that will outlast us. Of course, that's that famous William James quote. So until next time, invest in joy. Create your legacy of joy. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker, and this has been the Artful Asking Success Club. Dial down the drama. Dial up your success. Big hugs to you. Happy Halloween. Enjoy your fall and your year end. Invest in joy. Bye-bye now.